both were in a trice revealed to be very abnormal indeed. Consider the military's role in national security. The countries of this world spend nearly $2 trillion a year on weapons, designed to defend the homeland and protect the citizenry. But all those tanks and missiles and soldiers at the border could do nothing to prevent the spread of the novel coronavirus or stop its killing spree. More than 1 million people have died during this pandemic. The United States spends more than any other country on the military. That hasn't stopped Americans from suffering the most from COVID-19 deaths in the world. More Americans have died in this pandemic than died in combat in the US Civil War. More have died of COVID-19 than in combat in the First World War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Persian Gulf War, the Iraq War, and the war in Afghanistan combined. The misallocation of resources on the Pentagon at the expense of social needs has been on full display during the coronavirus pandemic. The United States touted its medical system as the best in the world, but many hospitals have simply not been able to handle the surge in critically ill patients. Prior to the coronavirus outbreak, the growing divide between the rich and the poor was increasingly evident at the global scale and within countries as well. The pandemic has made the divide even more visible. Because of a lack of face masks, water for hand washing, and space for social distancing, the poor have been hard-pressed to avoid the disease. The working poor, meanwhile, have had to put themselves at greater risk of exposure simply by showing up at work in the fields, in slaughterhouses, and in hospitals. The wealthy have largely escaped the damage because by the crash of the global economy. The stock market has nearly regained its value after its spring plunge. Extreme poverty, on the other hand, is increasing for the first time in more than 20 years, with the World Bank estimating that as many as 150 million people worldwide will become desperately poor by 2021. With the rollback of industry and travel came a major reduction in fossil fuel use. Daily carbon dioxide emissions dropped by 17% globally in April and May of 2020 with the economic lockdowns. Air pollution declined as well, immediately improving health. The residents of northern India could see the Himalayas for the first time in 30 years. And Los Angeles' smog practically disappeared. It would be reassuring if the world has heeded the warnings of COVID-19, but many countries, including the United States of America, are continuing to increase their military spending. Precious little of the trillions of dollars of economic stimulus is going to poverty alleviation, much less a fundamental restructuring of the global economy along more equitable lines. And although the drop in carbon emissions this year was larger than during the financial crisis of 2008, or the oil crisis of the 1979, the international community has made no further collective commitment to take advantage of this windfall by locking in reductions to the global carbon footprint or shifting more quickly to clean energy. As the contributors point out in our Pandemic Pivot report produced by the Institute for Policy Studies, the Transnational Institute and Focus on the Global South and just published by an ebook by Seven Stories Press, it's not too late to heed the warnings of COVID-19. Resources to combat the impact of the pandemic are needed immediately, and military budgets are the logical pots of money to draw from. A global Green New Deal can simultaneously reduce carbon emissions and create new jobs through the building of clean energy infrastructure. World leaders push from the below by popular movements must use the pandemic as an opportunity for informative change. We can't just sit around waiting for a vaccine, nor should we dream about returning to the previous abnormal state of affairs. A woke frog does not return to a pot of boiling water. COVID-19's message is quite clear. We need to move forward. We need to move quickly into a very different future.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamati. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, other life forms, welcome to today's episode of Youth Station.
Choo-choo, ka-choo, it's a youth station for you.
Who tells you to do that? I'm going to have to talk to the producer after this. Anyway, have you watched any good movies lately?
Lately, I watched Contagion lately. Freaked me out.
Serious?
Absolutely freaked me out. It's totally predictive programming.
Oh, right.
Predictive programming. You know, when they put an idea into your mind so that when that scenario really takes place, you will expect it to take place in the way that the movie set it out. This is what subconsciously they often do. And you can see examples of this of 9/11, you know, terrorist attacks taking place by Muslim fundamentalist extremist terrorists, you know, that type. You know, they put these ideas into people's minds way, way back before 9/11 even took place. So,
you know what other topic do they do that with?
What?
The whole apocalypse, end of the world idea, the whole, sometimes even the Messiah notion, that there's going to be someone who is going to appear and kind of save the world. And and in a lot of cases, if they're not actively trying to base it on biblical facts, that Messiah figure ends up to be a fraud and, you know, was trying to trick everyone and deceive everyone after all, and this and that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally, I do. It's because this is the way predictive programming works. So they'll put this scenario into your mind. For example, the end of the world scenario, right?
So many movies on this topic.
Right, there's loads. And at the end of the movie, you'll notice that they will present a hero. And it will usually be in the form of an American hero. So when you start to see these things really happening, like, for example, the world is like tearing apart, you know, there's earthquakes taking place, there's, I don't know, an alien invasion, something. You always, subconsciously, you will have it in your mind that America and the American military, the American scientists are somehow going to put an end to this. They're going to save the day. They're going to have the superhero. You know, Superman belongs to them. You know, they are going to be the
actual
saviors.
Even Superman himself, the character, I think it's a sort of a Messiah figure.
Well, he comes from a different planet, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly. He's always here to save, and he's so righteous and pious and fair and he selfless. And a lot of scenes when you, like, go back to, if you randomly pause during the parts where the camera, he's the center focus of the camera, or they set the angle in a certain way that kind of reminisces that Messiah ideology in the head.
Wind blowing.
He's either spreading his arms, you know, to form that cross, or he's this character floating in the air and there's a mass under him. But aside from Superman, which I watched because, why did I watch Superman?
I was thinking of 2000.
Ah, I like the actor.
So there's a movie called 2012, which they actually made before 2012. Because
John Cusack, yeah.
Yeah, everybody was freaked out about the movie. But anyway, when it came out, it was like, whoa, you know, I don't think anybody liked it, honestly. It was such a bad movie.
Cringy.
But it's a perfect example. Right at the end, you'll notice that they get saved because they escape to
a
secret underground American operation.
Really?
Where they're building ships.
I remember it so wrong.
They're building these ships, remember? These
okay.
arcs, quote unquote.
No way.
Yeah. And they actually show that all the rich and famous people, the Saudis,
the Queen
of England, I think some American celebrities, they get on board and it's like, we're going to be the saved ones and everybody else pretty much
gets
to.
And we're going to rebuild society.
But the point is, it's American. Right? And this is a recurring theme. World War Z. Remember World War Z? Brad Pitt?
Okay, first I need to say tell you something before we carry on with this conversation. I actively try to stay away from apocalyptic messiah end of the world movies.
Why?
First of all, I find it really unrealistic with a hint of, you know, stressing me out.
It stresses you out? Why?
It stresses me out that I live on the same planet with a population that actually believes in this sort of nonsense.
Which sort of nonsense are we talking about?
The end of the world and, you know, the chaos and how mankind is just left to its own whim. And at some point, planet Earth is just going to be done with us. And it's going to be like, okay, I'm going to just swallow my inhabitants whole because we need to start anew. And a lot of people really believe in that. You know, they don't believe in a divine plan. They don't believe that this entire creation exists on a firm foundation of divine knowledge and wisdom and philosophy. And it irks me to know that I live on the same planet with such people. Well, I'm sure a lot of people are irked from the thought of living on the same planet as me.
No, sister, but the thing is, it's interesting you would say that because most of these movies, especially when it's dealing with the apocalypse, almost always have a sense of divine hope in them.
How did World War Z have a sense of divine hope?
Well, do you remember what happens in the end?
I never watched it.
And they find this
refuge
this
in a
cure.
Church.
It's not in America this time, you know, but it's still in a
but
European
it's
country.
Brad Pitt.
It's still American hero, right?
Yeah,
he's the
main. They have that
white savior
complex,
you know?
Yeah.
But the idea that hope remains and that they manage to save humanity is always I Am Legend. Same thing. You didn't watch.
I didn't watch that either.
Do you read
every movie before I watch it.
Okay.
I'm one of those psychos.
Well, I Am Legend, the same thing, right? Humanity is done for because of a virus. Sounds familiar. They're done for because of a virus, but then Will Smith, he has the antivirus in his DNA or something, and then at the end, they escape to
and there
a
is
place
a lot them. Of characters in all these movies. I feel like there's a pattern. I've never watched any of these movies, but I often read into them. And there's always this pattern where there's always the protagonist, usually a white male, except for Will Smith's case. And they are immune to whatever the hell is going on in the world. Mm. They're just immune. Like, even in Contagion, Matt Damon's character, he was immune to the virus breakout, remember?
Yeah. And he has nothing
special
consequential
about him. Okay.
To give to the actual plot of the movie.
Yeah, he really doesn't. He just, you know, leads the movie on because he's Matt Damon.
Yeah. That's a really interesting point, actually. There's always has to be that one person who's immune to it. Guess who it is in today's world? Trump. He actually tweeted, "My blood is the cure." Which is actually what happens in I Am Legend, so God knows. But yeah, there's always this divine sense of hope, and it is manifested.
How do you call it divine, though?
The protagonist. There's religious themes scattered throughout these movies. I'll give you an example. If you go to World War Z,
okay.
There's a scene where they are in occupied Palestine. There's Israeli flags billowing in the wind. And you see, like, you know, Jerusalem and all of these multi-ethnic, multicultural people of different religions. There's a woman wearing hijab there, and they all, you know, it's shown to be a last sanctuary.
Is that really their last sanctuary? Is that where they take refuge?
It's not. But
where do they take refuge at the end of
the movie? The fact that they have that scene in there.
I think the fact that they have that scene in there, it means what they're trying to allude to is that nothing matters. When the world is going to come to an end and everyone is going to die because of this virus or this infection or this alien invasion, no religion matters anymore. Your made-up religions are just dust in the wind. We're all doomed.
Ooh, that's a really interesting point, actually, which I didn't think of before. Because I was thinking more about the iconography. Once you've put that image into people's minds, you know, Israeli flags and everybody, you know, hunky-dory and every, you know, Muslims and Christians and Jews, they're all happy together. And then it shows that the zombies climb over the wall, you know, and disrupt that peace,
wall.
Right? So you can see where I'm going, right? They've put this iconography into the mind. It doesn't matter, like, what happens in the plot, per se. You've seen it, and now you're going to believe it when you see it. But no, coming back to your point, you do have a very good point there.
But they were invaded by the zombies, nevertheless.
Because it's always science.
Like, in the movie 2012, I remember it because it's the only movie I watched it, and I watched it because my brother was going through a phase. And I remember...
The 2012 phase?
Yeah. He was going through this end-of-the-world phase.
I'm still going through that.
I remember that there were a lot of religious elements in the movie, scattered across the movie, right?
Yeah.
And there was even this toward the ending where the Prime Minister of Italy, I believe, who is a devout Catholic, he decided not to board any of the vessels or whatever they were to. And he was like, I'm just going to die on my faith. And the water started flooding the cathedral or whatever it is that he was in.
He's messed up.
Yeah, and then he was just standing there accepting his fate with his rosary in hand, or, I don't know, crossing himself or something like that.
I don't know what they're trying to show through that.
My point is that I think what they're trying to say is that at the end of the day, we're all doomed.
Except for those who are chosen. This is a recurring theme.
Yes, the chosen
ones, yes.
It's in every movie,
and,
bro.
And it's often science which saves them. So look at all of these, right? I Am Legend. What saves them? He's a doctor. He saves them from
Except
science.
Except for Frodo. Sam is
the one. Leave Lord of the Rings out. Lord of the Rings, don't go there, right?
Finally someone sees it my way, okay?
Lord of the Rings is heavy. Lord of the Rings is based on the Bible.
It is.
But anyway, these movies, though, I Am Legend... And all the ones that we've mentioned.
2012.
Contagion.
Right. World War Z. War of the Worlds.
28 Days Later.
Yes. You know, the Day the World Stood Still, something like that.
All of
these.
The
Day After Tomorrow.
It is shown to you very clearly that it is science that saves
the day.
Humanity.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, in 2012, it's the Ark. And in other places, it's an antivirus.
Yes,
it's a vaccine.
It's,
you know... an experiment.
Is that so bad, though?
Not if the science was in our hands, in the hands of Islam.
What do you mean?
Because now this idea can be manipulated.
That?
For example, if going back to like a quote which is attributed to Einstein, you know, science without religion is cruel. Religion without science is blind, but science without religion is cruel,
mm-hmm.
right? Science is going in that direction where it doesn't have an ethical kind of compass
code,
to guide
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So, you know, anything could actually be done. Did you know, this is insane. I don't know if you already know this, but one of the signs of the apocalypse, for according to Christians and Jews, is the red heifer.
What's that?
A yellow cow. It's called a red heifer. It's like a red,
baqara?
Reddish yellow. Okay, so do you know in Surah Baqarah, Prophet Musa, he says that, you know, bring me a yellow cow.
Yeah.
You know, and you know the whole story, but they fail to do it. So one of their signs, and I always thought, God, this is an interesting story, but I don't know why you're telling us.
Why is your longest chapter about a cow, God?
Right. So then later on, I found an episode of South Park, funnily enough, and they're basically showing a doomsday scenario.
Okay.
And a yellow cow is spotted, a red cow, a red heifer, they call it. And this cow, they find out later, and all the Christians, Muslims and Jews get together and they think, okay, it's the apocalypse, it's going to happen, nothing happens. And so they become friends. It's like a really comedic way to explore the stupidity of religion, you know, from the eyes of these atheist cartoon makers. But the point is, at the end of the cartoon, you find out that the red cow wasn't real. And they actually, the main character, just Cartman, he just painted it yellow, painted it red, and he fooled everybody. This red heifer has to be seen in occupied Palestine, in Israel. It has to be born there or it has to be seen there.
So there are a group of people...
Who believe this, yes.
And are on the lookout for a...
Yes. Okay. So a couple of years back, they biologically engineered this. They
Is that
engineered
how desperate
it.
We are?
And they created it in Israel. The Zionists, they actually did it. It was mainstream news, and even the BBC was saying, okay, is this the apocalypse about to happen? You know, this is one of the examples of what science is being used to do. So we have to be careful. Like, it's science at the moment.
But I think anything in the hands of the ignorant and the immoral is a horrible thing. Even religion. the wars and the injustice and the massacres that took place in the name of religion aren't little in number.
Going back to Surah Baqarah for a moment, you remember what happens, right?
We're almost out of time, but tell me.
The people, the Bani Israel, what do they do?
This dude gets killed, and then they don't know who the murderer is, and Nabi Musa and Nabi Nawadu As-Salam is like, y'all gotta slaughter a cow. And then, like, what does a cow look like?
That all happens, but then zoom forward. They start to worship the golden cow.
All over again.
Why?
A different cow.
The golden cow was actually moving. It was actually making sounds.
Noises, yeah.
It was as if it was alive. I mean, that is astonishing. That's absolutely astonishing. It was a scientific feat, the likes of which even today hasn't accomplished.
Okay. But then again, it wasn't gained through science. It's because that dude, Samiri...
Samiri, what did he do?
He said that I found something in the footsteps of the angel or
prophet.
The prophet or the apostle or whatever. And I used it and I cast it into the calf and the calf started doing funky stuff.
Okay. Is that not science?
The point is that...
We have to be cautious of what the mainstream media is creating. They're preconditioning us to think in a certain way when
yes.
it comes to... Especially when it comes to the Messiah and apocalyptic scenarios.
Yeah.
You know.
And also don't obsess about it too much.
Don't look for an American hero.
Yeah.
When it comes to these things, I think that's the bottom line. Notice also that the Zionists are doing something interesting, and we have to be cautious of them massively and not trust what they're putting out there.
Inshallah ta'ala. Thank you so very much for being with us. Until the next episode of our show, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
My love, my life, my days, my nights, my wealth, my prayers are for to have your precious love in my life. Now I know how it feels to finally be at peace inside. I wish that everybody knew how amazing it feels to love you. I wish that everyone could see how you love. Set me free and make me strong.
In the limelight.
The article you're about to hear has been authored by Veronica Penny, who is a reporter covering climate change. The article carries the title, Americans May Add 5 times More Plastic to the Oceans Than Thought. Stay tuned, please. The United States is using more plastic than ever, and waste exported for recycling is often mishandled, according to a new study. The United States' contribution to coastal plastic pollution worldwide is significantly larger than previously thought, possibly by as much as 5 times. The research, published in Science Advances, is the sequel to a 2015 paper by the same authors. Two factors contributed to the sharp increase. Americans are using more plastic than ever, and the current study included pollution generated by United States exports of plastic waste, while the earlier one did not. The United States, which does not have sufficient infrastructure to handle its recycling demands at home, exports about half of its recyclable waste. Of the total exported, about 88% ends up in countries considered to have inadequate waste management. When you consider how much plastic waste isn't actually recyclable because it is low value, contaminated, or difficult to process, It's not surprising that a lot of it ends up polluting the environment, said the study's lead author, Carol Lavender Law, research professor of oceanography at Sea Education Association, in a statement. The study estimates that in 2016, the United States contributed between 1.1 and 2.2 million metric tons of plastic waste to the oceans through a combination of littering, dumping, and mismanaged exports. At a minimum, that's almost double the total estimated waste in the team's previous study. At the high end, it would be a five-fold increase over the earlier estimate. Nicholas Malus, a senior director at the Ocean Conservancy and an author of the study, said the upper estimate would be equal to a pile of plastic covering the area of the White House lawn and reaching as high as the Empire State Building. The ranges are wide partly because there is no real standard for being able to provide good quality data on collection and disposal of waste in general, said Ted Silger, a resource economist and an author of the study. Silger said the researchers had evaluated waste disposal practices in countries around the world and used their best professional judgment to determine the lowest and highest amounts of plastic waste likely to escape into the environment. They settled on a range of 25% to 75%. Tony Walker, an associate professor at the Dalhousie University School for Resource and Environmental Studies in Halifax, Nova Scotia, said analyzing waste data can amount to data minefield because there are no data standards across municipalities. Moreover, once plastic waste is shipped overseas, he said, data is often not recorded at all. Nonetheless, Dr. Walker, who was not involved in the study, said it could offer a more accurate accounting of plastic pollution than the previous study, which likely underestimated the United States' contribution. They've put their best estimate as an accurate and as they can be with this data, he said, and used ranges, which underscores that the figures are estimates. Of the plastics that go into the United States recycling system, about 9% of the country's total plastic waste, there is no guarantee that they will be remade into new consumer goods. New plastic is so inexpensive to manufacture that only certain expensive, high-grade plastics are profitable to recycle within the United States, which is why roughly half of the country's plastic waste was shipped abroad in 2016, the most recent year for which data is available. Since 2016, however, the recycling landscape has changed. China and many countries in Southeast Asia have stopped accepting plastic waste imports, and lower oil prices have further reduced the market for recycled plastic. What the new study really underscores is we have to get a handle on secure reduction at home, Mr. Malus said. That starts with eliminating unnecessary and problematic single-use plastics.
Thank you. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, politeness in speech and interactions. Brothers and sisters, your mouth is one of your ways to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The most favorite mouth before Allah is the one most fragrant. So keep your mouth as fragrant as you can. And who said that? It's Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. The outward meaning of this saying is that since man uses his mouth to vocalize Allah's remembrance and worship and recite divine verses, he should keep it clean and fragrant. The hadiths, this hadith that we just read, its inward meaning signifies that the mouth, which is one of the ways of relating with the divine paths of Allah's servants, is more favored by Allah when it becomes fragrant with good, clean, and kind speech, and is free from bad utterances, insults, lies, and harshness. See, when we talk about being polite and speaking in a polite manner, it is something completely opposite to and contrary to bad utterances and, you know, using derogatory and insulting phrases and words. And then, you know, lying, of course, we know that it's a greater sin. A tongue that is a lying tongue and a tongue that gets used to of lying can never be polite. You know, polite in its real sense. And then, of course, harshness. Sometimes we see around us people, they, don't necessarily have bad intentions, but they're harsh in their communications. They're harsh when they talk and interact with others. They're harsh when they respond to things. You know, this harshness is something, again, contrary to the politeness in speech that we're discussing. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we're discussing the importance of politeness in speech and interactions. Brothers and sisters, politeness helps us to deal with other people easily and smoothly. It helps us get on with strangers in a crowded place, and it helps us get what we want. So for instance, you know, say please, and you notice that your transaction get easier, right? A lot of times we have experienced that. Politeness is something we learn as children, and we expect to see it in other people too. Now, when we talk about politeness in speech and interaction, you know, there are a few points, you know, I would like to lay down here, which we should keep in mind. Number one is, listen and be understanding. You know, politeness in speech does not really mean that you keep speaking and don't let the other party share their sentiments. No, you have to be a good listener in order to be a polite person. The second one is avoid negative words. Instead, use positive words in a negative form. You know, we can't say that we never have anything negative to say. No, sometimes we have to point out a fault, right? How do you do that? It's not really the issue of whether we're going to point out the fault or the error or not. No, of course we're going to do that. But how do we do that? You know, keeping your tone positive and making sure that you get the message across to the other person. Number three, say the magic word. And guess what it is? It's called sorry. You know, we all make mistakes here and there. You know, it doesn't bring your self-esteem down if you just say the word sorry. A lot of the problems we see in society are because people are not ready to give in and, you know, just kneel down when they make a mistake. We all make mistakes here and there. Say the magic word, sorry. Number four, use little words to soften your statement. You know, there are little words that we will go over, but, you know, there are those keywords that you should use in your communication. Last but not the least, avoid finger-pointing statements with the word you. And sometimes we end up doing that, you know, in our communication with other people. We're saying, you did that, and then we're pointing this finger at them and not realizing what meaning it's going to convey to them. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parsetoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
As Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris delivered acceptance speeches Saturday night, November 7th, Trump bucked the tradition of congratulating the winners and instead spent the evening tweeting out claims that he won the election and making allegations of fraud, says John Quilley, writer, in an article published under the heading, Trump faces growing fury over his refusal to concede defeat to Biden. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Increasing levels of anger and frustration were voiced on Sunday, November 8, as U.S. President Donald Trump continued his refusal to accept the election results that show he was defeated. Even as Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris delivered acceptance speeches on Saturday night, November 7th, Trump bucked the tradition of congratulating the winners and instead spent the evening tweeting out claims that he won the election and making allegations of fraud in U.S. election. As CNN reports, Trump so far has refused to accept the election results, waging a legal strategy to contest them in courts and issuing allegations of fraud. There are currently no plans to invite Biden to the Oval Office for the traditional meeting between the incoming and outgoing presidents, a historic sign of the peaceful transfer of power. Aides instead are working to craft ways for the U.S. president to feel validated even in loss, including through more rallies. But after claiming publicly that he won the election, sources say Trump is not denying the outcome privately. And two people said Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law and senior advisor who oversaw his campaign from the White House, has approached Trump about conceding the election. On Sunday, November 8, as the claims by the U.S. President Donald Trump continued, many Trump critics began to lose their patience. It is obscene for a president of the United States to talk of a stolen election when he has not put up any meaningful evidence of any more stealing the election, said Stephen Greenhouse, former labor reporter for the New York Times, in a Sunday morning tweet. The president needs to stop putting his narcissistic selfishness over what is good for our nation and our democracy, he added. Stephen King, the famed novelist and an avowed Democrat, was even more blunt in his proclamation. You lost, you miserable, self-entitled, infantile person, King declared. Concede and get the hell out. In a letter to editor at Guardian on Sunday, November 8th, reader Pete Dury in the UK said he fears that Trump's disputing of the validity of the election result is much more insidious than him simply being a bad loser, Dury wrote. By repeatedly denouncing the accuracy of the outcome, even before it has been confirmed, Trump is giving his supporters a green light to spend the next 4 years blatantly defying a Biden government and generally causing public mayhem. On the grounds that Democrats stole the election from Trump and that the new government thus has no Democratic authority of mandate. As such, many fear that mass protests across the U.S., the occupation of public buildings, and intimidation, especially of black communities, by gun-toting Trump and Biden supporters, will become a routine occurrence, justified on the grounds that ignoring the undemocratic Biden government is the duty of true American patriots. If tough punitive action is taken against them, they will claim that democracy and liberty are being suppressed by radical leftists in Washington. But if their mayhem is ignored, they will claim that law and order is being undermined due to a weak government enthralled to political correctness and snowflake liberals. Ahead of Biden being declared the projected winner by nearly every major news outlet in the U.S. on Saturday, November 7th, his campaign spokesperson Andrew Bates on Friday, November 6th, said their team was not ultimately worried if Trump, when defeated, refused to leave the White House voluntarily. The United States government, said Bates, is perfectly capable of escorting trespassers out of the White House. According to reports, on Friday, November 6th, a viral claim that Pennsylvania had 21,000 dead people on its voter rolls spread across the internet. In some versions of the rumor, those deceased people had voted for the Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. The right-wing publication wrote, in an article about this issue. Others then cited it as evidence that Democrats were trying to steal the election. Rudy Giuliani, President Donald Trump's personal lawyer, shared the article on Twitter.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Around the world with reporters.
The head of the UK Armed Forces has warned if current smaller conflicts escalate out of control, drawing in more countries and weapons, World War III might break out. In a Remembrance Day interview with Sky News, General Sir Nick Carter said the world is currently, quote, a very uncertain and anxious place.
We have to remember history might not repeat itself, but it has a rhythm. And if you look back at the last century, before both world wars, I think it was unarguable that there was escalation that led to the miscalculation, which ultimately led to war at a scale we would hopefully never see again.
General Carter says that the British Army will comprise 90,000 human soldiers and 30,000 robots by the 2030s. And aside from modernising and amplifying its own military, the UK is still the world's second largest arms exporter. Military arms deals worth an estimated £39 billion were approved between 2008 and 2017, a third of which went to countries with abysmal human rights records.
But we have not seen any evidence of that. If we stop selling them the bombs, if we stop selling them the planes, that will have an impact on Saudi and on what Saudi can do in Yemen, because we are one of the main exporters of arms to Saudi Arabia, and frankly, we can't make bombs fast enough for them.
The UK currently has £11 billion worth of orders. So how does stockpiling and exporting arms factor into the UK's World War III game plan?
The UK government has spent hundreds of billions of pounds, large amounts of which have yet to be properly even accounted for, in response to the coronavirus crisis. And General Carter knows full well, I suspect, as do many others in government, that at some point a reckoning for this is going to come, and this money is going to have to be found somewhere, either through tax rises or more likely through departmental budget cuts. And that time is fast approaching, when indeed the British government, as indeed other governments, are going to have to start doing the mathematical reckoning for their spending. And so I think possibly what's the motive here for General Carter as head of the UK Armed Forces to remind yet again for the message that is constantly being put out by the think tanks and the media that support strong armed forces, that is that the world is a dangerous place.
The world is still reeling from the results of the presidential elections in the US, undisputedly the world's military heavyweight. And although Donald Trump's four-year term was the first without a new war since Eisenhower, his administration has allowed military voices to shout down those of experienced civil servants in the development of foreign policy, funding cuts to non-defense federal agencies and many career civil servants resigning means policy planning is being entrusted invariably to those in uniform. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The United States has not been so divided in recent memory as there are two people claiming to be president. The mainstream media rushed to accept Joe Biden's declaration of victory, even though he has an average lead of only 32,000 votes in three states in a vote which is not even finished counting yet. Donald Trump has also claimed victory prematurely. It appears half the country believes Biden is the president-elect, while the other half believes Trump is the president-elect. No one knows what will happen next, and many fear tensions could elevate into violence.
Joe Biden has won. Trump may contest it, but the evidence is there. There is no illegal things regarding vote. The system has worked, and it will continue. One man will not ruin this system for us. Joe Biden is now our president.
And one thing I want to add, it's not Republican versus Democrat. Yes. We are Americans.
Americans. Special about our country.
Period.
But mail-in ballots were used in unprecedentedly massive numbers, and the vote's legality has been openly disputed for many months. It seems certain the courts will ultimately decide the legality of the vote, and maybe even who won, as in the year 2000, which caused massive political alienation, cultural division, and mistrust. The lack of trust is also because the U.S. election process is considered the worst of any of the core Western democracies. That's according to the Harvard-based Electoral Integrity Project, whose 2019 index ranked U.S. elections just 57th in the world. Pro-Biden corporate media is seemingly acting as if there is no dispute at all, while skeptical pro-Trump outlets insist this unique election must be vetted by the courts, and that Trump must not concede before that process is finished.
I think he'll just give it up eventually. People will stop giving him airtime, stop giving him attention, and he'll just give up. He'll figure out another way to be in the news and all over the place.
Both sides appear to be bewildered by the stance of the other side, and both sides are certain of their own righteousness. With two presidents, many say the U.S. election could not have turned out worse, and the worst seems yet to come. Rami Mazahiri, Chicago.
Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has congratulated U.S. President-elect Joe Biden. In a statement, Abbas said he looks forward to working with the president-elect and his administration. Palestinian officials have expressed their satisfaction with the departure of outgoing President Donald Trump and said, for them, nothing was worse than Trump's era.
We welcome the results of the American elections. Like many world states, we agreed that Trump's era was a nightmare. As President Abbas said, we are looking forward to achieve freedom, independence, justice, and dignity for our people. All previous U.S. administrations had specific commitments towards Israel, but this time we hope we can cooperate with the new administration.
Several Palestinian political groups have also expressed their satisfaction with, in the first place, the departure of President Donald Trump, the man who took several anti-Palestinian measures, including recognition of Jerusalem al-Quds as Israel's capital in late 2017, moving the U.S. embassy there, and declaring the so-called deal of the century. This had led the Palestinian Authority to halt its political dealings with Trump's administration.
We don't expect to witness a great difference between U.S. administrations and the Israeli regime. But Trump tarnished U.S. image and harmed its interests in the region. I hope Biden can make the U.S. committed to international law. Biden and Trump differ in everything, in performance and reasoning.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who was among Trump's close allies around the world, waited 12 hours to congratulate Biden. But at the same time, he thanked Trump for taking U.S.-Israel ties to an unprecedented level. For Palestinians, a change of administration in the U.S. is not a promise of change in Washington's policy toward them. However, Palestinians do hope for a gain in Donald Trump's departure, as his term in office is considered the worst even among most hostile U.S. presidents. Mona Kandil, Occupied Ramallah.
Coronavirus cases among the general population are rapidly increasing in the Gaza Strip as over 200 infections are being discovered daily. The first community spread of the deadly virus was detected in late August, and over 8,000 cases have been discovered so far. Health officials have sounded the alarm over the rising figures in the densely populated enclave.
The number of infections in the Gaza Strip is high, and we are extremely worried due to the rising number. We are doing our best to deal with the situation. We are working round the clock to detect infections.
The coronavirus has complicated the already dire humanitarian situation in the blockaded Gaza Strip. COVID-19 has threatened the socioeconomic welfare of nearly 2 million Palestinians living in Gaza as much as their health.
People here don't have access to preventive equipment because they are crash-strapped. They can hardly provide food for their families.
People have been suffering from the Israeli blockade, and now the situation has only gotten worse because of the coronavirus pandemic.
The Israeli blockade in place since 2007 has had a devastating impact on the well-being of people in the tiny coastal sliver. Gaza's health sector is suffering from acute shortage in medicines and hospital supplies.
14 years of the inhumane Israeli blockade on the Gaza Strip have taken their toll on the humanitarian, health, and economic situation. The Israeli blockade has left the health system in Gaza in ruin, making it unable to deal with the coronavirus pandemic.
The coronavirus is fast spreading in the Gaza Strip, and people fear the worst because of the high population density.
As infections continue to rise, rights groups are calling for the complete lifting of the Israeli blockade to help fight the spread of the deadly coronavirus. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
On Friday, taxi drivers went on a one-day strike nationwide, calling the government's attention to the economic plight they're facing following the pandemic crisis and the connected restrictions. Unions also called two protests held in front of the economy and transport ministries, attended by thousands of taxi drivers from across the country. Drivers are demanding more support from the government as, quote, they don't have the money to pay the monthly costs of the vehicles, nor to provide for their families.
Gli aiuti ricevuti sono assolutamente insufficienti.
The subsidies we have received from the government so far are totally inadequate. 275 euros each month is not sufficient. How are we supposed to put food on the table for our families? Consider we have suffered losses in the range of 80 to 90%.
Non torna ai 3.600 euro.
Io ho ricevuto.
My income has dropped by 80%, but all expenses have remained unvaried. Insurance fees, fuel and car disinfection costs have not been reduced. Furthermore, the government is doing nothing to stop illegal cabs from going around.
È molto alta.
A new three-tire restriction system came into force on Friday. As a result, four Italian regions, namely Calabria, Lombardy, Piedmont and Val d'Aosta, have been placed in soft lockdowns. The government has also imposed a nationwide curfew from 10 p.m. until 5 a.m., requiring all museums and galleries to shut down and all shopping centers to close on weekends.
Protests against the new anti-COVID restrictions imposed by the government have been staged in a number of cities across Italy. Some demonstrations turned violent as protesters vented their frustration and anger over how the pandemic crisis has been handled.
The virus is a moving train. Today it is necessary to slow it down, otherwise the train will knock us down. We are hopeful that these measures will be limited to several weeks.
The new restrictions imposed by the Italian government apply for about 4 weeks, until December 3. Max Civili, Rome.
On the 14th of March 2011, Bahraini security forces began a violent crackdown on protests demanding greater political participation, free and fair elections, and an end to corruption and a